At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Welcome back to another edition of Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell, wishing you a happy Sunday. In today's show, our political team will delve into Governor Scott Walker's first week on the campaign trail. And books editor Jim Higgins returns with his review of Go Set a Watchman. Before we get into those stories, let's take a look at this Sunday story from crime reporter Ashley Luthern. During the past 9 years, Minneapolis has experienced a 72% drop in non-fatal shootings involving youths. Milwaukee, however, has only seen a 29% drop in that same time period. Why has there been such a discrepancy in numbers between the two cities? Minneapolis came up with a comprehensive plan to reduce youth violence. And, as Ashley writes, Milwaukee doesn't have a plan to do that. Here's Ashley and reporter Bill Glauber with more.
I'm Bill Glauber with Ashley Luthern, crime public safety reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She has a fantastic story as part of her Precious Lives series. It's on Minneapolis and what they're doing to deal with kids being shot. What they have a plan up there. What is it?
So back in 2006, Minneapolis was experiencing, for their city, an uptick in deadly violence involving kids, teens shooting one another. And the mayor at the time, R.T. Ryback, just was appalled. And he kept hearing from bystanders, oh, I kind of saw this coming. And his thought was, well, why didn't you do something about it? And then he thought, well, why didn't the city do something about it? And that really led to this idea of, we need a plan to address this. And that led to something they call the Blueprint for Action to reduce youth violence. It's not rocket science. It's a series of broad goals that are fostering violence-free neighborhoods, schools, and parks, connecting kids and teens to a trusted adult, intervening with youth at the first sign of risk, and redirecting kids and teens who have gone down the wrong path, maybe have gotten an arrest or two on their record, and then concentrating law enforcement efforts on protecting kids and young adults from violence. So these very broad goals, but then they were developed using a whole collaboration of now more than 80 agencies in the city and the county and nonprofits and philanthropic organizations. And they use those goals as a blueprint, as their title says, to make sure that everyone is working to achieve those things.
It seems like Milwaukee has many plans, but not a single plan. What's going on?
So that's accurate. And I think what frustrates a lot of community members and local agencies is that there are some programs that have really shown promise here in Milwaukee. And the idea is, if they're showing so much progress and, you know, results, why can't we amplify them? Why can't we take them citywide? And so there really is a desire to have a comprehensive citywide plan. Mayor Tom Barrett says there is one being developed right now. A strategic plan. Some of the folks that I spoke with are a little unsure of the plan or its scope. The mayor says it will be comprehensive. It is based off of plans like Minneapolis and Philadelphia that take a public health approach to preventing violence.
This has obviously been a violent summer in Milwaukee. And Ashley, you've been covering this prior to that, too, with a series called Precious Lives. Tell us about what that series entails.
Precious Lives is a partnership with multiple media companies led by 371 Productions. It's a production company based in the Third Ward of Milwaukee. They received grant funding to do this project, to tell stories of people affected by gun violence, the causes of gun violence, and to propose possible solutions. The centerpiece is a weekly radio series that airs on WUWM. It also airs on WNOV, and we post it here online at jsonline.com. And those are very personal stories, usually focusing on individuals who have been victims of gun violence or their families have been. And then what I do is offer supplementary reporting. Sometimes it's very similar to the radio piece. Sometimes it's different. Sometimes it takes a theme in the radio piece and expands on that. So we've talked to adults who were shot as children. We've talked to mothers who have lost children. We've talked to a woman who shot a teen in self-defense who was trying to rob her. And we're trying to look at some of the bigger picture possible solutions. We're not saying Minneapolis is the end-all be-all, but we're just presenting this as an option that Milwaukee could consider.
One last question. How's it affected you covering this issue?
That's a very good question, Bill. I don't quite know how to answer that.
But it has affected you, I think. Some of the stories that you've told about violence and people adapting to violence.
You can't cover these stories and not be affected. Everyone, you're dealing with life and death and people who have hurts that will never go away. And I think for me, it's just a constant reminder of how valuable life is and how I think, especially if you believe that violence is preventable, how urgent it is to try to address it.
Ashley, thank you very much.
If you're interested in reading Ashley's story, you can pick up this Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The story is also available at jsonline.com. If you find the story online, you'll also discover extensive related coverage, including a map of groups tackling youth violence in the city. To find out more about our Precious Lives Project, you can visit jsonline.com/precious lives. You can also listen to WUWM at 7:50 a.m. on Tuesdays or WNOV at 10:50 a.m. on Wednesdays. Last week at this time, the world had access to the first chapter of Harper Lee's novel, Go Set a Watchman. Book editor Jim Higgins shared his early thoughts with us then. Fast forward a week, and Jim has read the whole book. Here he is with his thoughts on Harper Lee's latest literary edition.
Go Set a Watchman isn't quite a sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird. It was written before To Kill a Mockingbird, but with older versions of the characters in To Kill a Mockingbird. And I think that relationship of one book to another is going to be confusing for readers. And as I said in my review, the more you love and the more you're attached to Kill a Mockingbird, the weirder Go Set a Watchman will be. It's almost like a kind of sequel, but in an alternative universe. Because I don't think, especially with Atticus, I don't think readers could read both books and square them up as, yes, this is exactly the same guy. As I said in my review, I don't think it's a good novel. It's an interesting start. It clearly showed signs of a talented writer, and the editor at her first publisher who read Watchmen and said, you know, you should write a book about Scout when she's younger, was clearly a brilliant person. Because even in Watchmen, the most interesting stuff are her flashbacks of life as a kid. There's so much energy and crisp storytelling in that, and the more adult stuff just isn't quite as good.
Clearly, one of the points of controversy has been the revelation that Atticus may, in fact, be a racist. What did you think of the way that she told that revelation came about? How have your feelings about Atticus changed?
Well, this again gets into, I'm rolling with my thesis that there are two Atticuses. There's the Atticus of Mockingbird and there's the Atticus of Watchmen, and it's an open debate if they're the same guy or not. In the new book, or the newly published book, which was written first, Harper Lee takes her time to roll out some revelations about Atticus's stance. And I don't want to give spoilers, but I would say there's nothing wrong necessarily with how she did it fictionally. I don't think you can always apply a moral test to a character in a novel. I just don't like the use she ultimately made of it. And some of the things she did in the book, once Jean Louise finds out something less than saintly about her father, it just goes down a road that makes for a poor novel. I mean, my biggest objections to Watchmen are that it's just not a very good novel. To me, it's secondary that Atticus might be a flawed person. If she had told the story better, I'd have been happy to roll along with that. So, and to say more about what she does, unfortunately, would be to give... I don't want to give away plot points about the end, but my main beef would be about it as a story, not necessarily about him as a person.
And obviously Mockingbird was made into a very famous movie. Do you think that there's potential for Watchmen to be made into a movie?
There's potential when you have a name this famous. I'd really hate to see it. I think it would be a desecration of the character. But this book isn't as well dramatized as the other one. Pretty large chunks of it consist of either Jean-Louise thinking or Jean-Louise dialoguing with various men. And that might be a little tough to make into a really compelling movie.
Harper Lee wasn't the only author Jim wrote about this week. The traveling exhibit, Maurice Sendak, 50 Years, Works, Reasons, has made its way to the Milwaukee Public Library's Central Branch. You can find the paintings, drawings, and illustrations from the author of Where the Wild Things Are on display in the Betty Brin Children's Room. To read Jim's review of Ghosts at a Watchman, or to find out about the Maurice Sendak exhibit, grab a copy of Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can also find both stories online at tapmilwaukee.com. In business news, fans of Pabst Old Tanker Ale have a reason to rejoice this week. After 20 years, Pabst Brewing Company will once again brew beer in Milwaukee. The company will open a microbrewery and a tasting room at its former brewing complex in downtown Milwaukee. Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Eugene Casper said the company is excited to have an innovation laboratory back in its hometown. Pabst plans to have the brewery operating by the summer of 2016. In other brewing news, Potosi Brewing Company has been ramping up production. Potosi can now produce 20,000 barrels annually. The company's new $5 million brewery opened in April. It allows Potosi to shift all of its production in-house. Previously, most of the company's beers had been brewed and packaged in Stevens Point. Potosi is hoping to increase sales in the Milwaukee area, so be on the lookout for their beers. In other business news, Wisconsin's unemployment rate held steady in June at 4.6%. The rate was at 5.4% in the same month a year ago. It's also well below the peak unemployment rate of 9.2% during the recession. Milwaukee's largest convention started Saturday. The annual Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company meeting brought about 10,000 employees downtown. The conference is estimated to bring in $12.9 million in local business this year. As always, for the best in business news, visit jsonline.com/business. Moving on, it was a big week in the political world. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker kicked off his presidential campaign on Monday after signing the state budget the day before. How's the first week of his campaign gone? Editor Greg Borowski asked columnists James Causey and Christian Snyder for their thoughts.
We're going to talk a little bit about how Governor Scott Walker's done on the trail now this week. This is his first, post-announcement trip. He was in Nevada and South Carolina. We've heard some blowback from folks on comments related to the Boy Scouts and how the governor said he preferred the sort of the old protections that were with their policies on gay Boy Scout leaders. And then minimum wage is a lame idea. James, let's start. How is the governor doing out there?
Well, right now he sounds a little bit like the Scott Walker that we know and some people love. He stumbles a little bit and then he comes back and tries to clean it all up. Like the situation with the Boy Scouts, a major stumble, I think. And this minimum wage was another major stumble. But to his base, he is still do well. But he has to do more to bring in people that don't look like him. Yeah, well, and people don't look like his crew that were supporting
him. Well, Christian, what's your general take on how the governor's done? And just this is his first week in the sort of that extra heightened scrutiny.
Yeah, the thing with the Boy Scouts was almost kind of like Scott Walker when he first started being kind of a non-candidate, which was his answer was in two parts. It was what he initially said and then the clarification. So I think he's kind of backing off on that. But in both cases, these are things that are not necessarily going to lose him votes with GOP primary voters. I mean, he has a point with the minimum wage, saying that it's a lame idea. I mean, it's, Democrats say that they want to create jobs and increase incomes and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, that's an old idea that just keeps getting recycled over and over, and it's going to end up costing people jobs. So Otherwise, I think he's done a pretty good job. I mean, he's been workmanlike. His speech at the Waukesha County Expo Center the other night was, you know, he hit all of his greatest hits. He did the Coles Cash, which Jimmy Fallon kind of rapped him for a little bit last night. But I thought it was a good speech. I thought the fact that he delivered it without any notes, without any teleprompter, I think was pretty impressive. So now he's just got to go try to convince people around the country that he's the guy that we know here.
And Walker's announcement wasn't the only major political headline this week. Wisconsin state senators voted 21-10 to approve the financing deal for the new Milwaukee Bucks Arena. The bill now moves to the state assembly. Here's Greg again talking to reporter Jason Stein and columnist Daniel Bice on what it will take to finalize the deal.
We're going to bring in and shift topics here to the Bucks Arena deal that a week ago we were talking about. It's out of the budget. Does that mean it's on its, you know, in dire straits? And have Dan Bice, our Watchdog columnist, joining us to comment on this. But Jason, first, just give us the quickest rundown here that we passed 21-10. You had Democratic support. You had a pretty strong Republican support. You know, what's next as this goes toward the assembly?
Sure. Well, it you know, the arena plan definitely picked up momentum yesterday as it heads out of the Senate and into the assembly. You know, arguably the Senate was a tougher vote, but certainly, even if you don't believe that, the proposal has a lot of momentum heading into the assembly. Very unlikely that you're going to see it fail now. Again, it's a $250 million, $250 million in public financing, plus additional interest costs to cover half the cost of a proposed new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks and to keep it.
Some things to make note of. One, the 21 votes was much higher than people had expected. We had been counting votes saying that they needed three or four Democrats, and then they ended up getting many more people than they expected. On the assembly side, Robin Voss has said he needs at least 15 Democrats to vote for this. First of all, most people don't believe that number. They think the number
is higher or lower.
It's a little artificially high, okay, because he wants to provide cover for some of his Republicans who might come under attack for this.
So any Democrat he gets beyond that, he can tell a Republican,
right,
you don't have to
each
take
time
this
he
vote.
Can. But it would mean if he needs 15, that would mean almost half his caucus is going to oppose the Bucks deal. But, you know, the Democratic Party yesterday gave some cover to their members by putting out a statement endorsing the legislation. And so the Democratic Party now is on record. But there are two concerns going forward. So the expectation is that it's going to pass the assembly. There will be the votes, and it'll be bipartisan in its support. But there are two issues going forward. One, there was a major change in terms of what was going on with Milwaukee County. They now will have to come up with $4 million a year somehow to pay for this. They were going to get it through this debt collection program with the state, but that's been removed. And so Chris Abele, the Milwaukee County Executive, has to figure out what to do about that. Will he, you know, will they make cuts? Will they do some sort of debt collection themselves? Or will they come back to the legislature and ask for this authority to do this contracting with the state again? And then the second issue, which Senator Fitzgerald mentioned today, and that is, mentioned yesterday, and that is, will these outstate legislators who voted for this come under attack in 2016 for this vote? It's something that everybody has to watch.
If you're interested in either one of those stories, you can find our previous coverage online at jsonline.com. Both of those segments were from our weekly JS on Politics show. If you missed the show, you can watch the replay online at jsonline.com/politics. You can also download that show as a podcast. You'll find that on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And that wraps up this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. If you're interested in the work we're doing with podcasts, pick up Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Greg wrote a column about the podcasts we're doing, including this podcast. You can also find that online, so swing by jsonline.com. And thanks again. Join us next week.
This is Amy Brown from Feeling Things with Amy and Kat. Back to school season always feels like a fresh start, not just for kids, but for all of us. It's a great reminder to create new routines and find meaningful ways to connect with our family, friends, and community. Hasbro games make it easy to gather around the table, put the screens away, share some laughs, and create joyful memories together. Whether it's Monopoly, Connect Four, Guess Who, or another family favorite, there's something for everyone. You can find these and other Hasbro favorites at your local Walmart, walmart.com, or simply tap the link in today's show notes to bring more play into your week.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.